Welcome back. We are at a transition point, I believe. And I think I mentioned this before, but I'll repeat it. I believe what we're going to be seeing now is simply the dictation of Jungian psychology. We went through all that stuff with, remember, Philemon and Baucis, the old man, the young man, and then Isdabar and so on. Which led to a couple of deaths, and then we had these images of the masculine figures, Apnevictu and so on, Philemon. Philemon's going to take the center stage, and Philemon is simply going to dictate Jungian psychology to Jung. And so what we'll be seeing is the birth of his psychology. We have to remember, he's hearing it for the first time. He doesn't understand it. So some of the formulations are kind of crude, and we'll have to try to interpolate what we hear. But I think it's going to become easier. Time will tell whether I'm right or not. What we're dealing with now is magic, war, and religion. And that will occupy the stage for quite a while. Magic is the best way he has of conceiving what he will later call the alchemical transformation process that occurs within, or if you prefer, the inner healing process. Pretty soon we'll start seeing him use the word mystery. I think mystery is a lot better. In the dream analysis seminar, some of you may remember going through it, he's working with this couple where the woman is frigid, and suddenly the thing starts working, and he says, don't ask me how, but it just starts working. I think that's what he came to, that real change, we don't understand it. We have to, and it doesn't mean it's a free lunch, we have to work, and there are many parameters that have to be followed. It's a very rigorous enterprise, but change itself happens, and it's a mystery. And that's what he's discovering. Why is that so important? Because for Freud, you make change happen. His famous dictum, where it is, there let ego be. I don't know if you've heard that before. In other words, where the unconscious is, you put your ego. And the ego substitutes for unconsciousness and takes over the show. And Jung is discovering something much different, that the healing process is a mystery. I once heard it put rather poetically, I guess you might say, that change is 25% your effort, 25% the therapist's effort, and 50% God's effort. And that adds up to 100%. And the speaker hastened down. Now that 25% is 100% of your effort, but something else is going on. And that's what he's now calling magic. It's really what he's going to spend his whole life delineating. If we can't understand what it is, we can understand how it works. And so he then will eventually go to alchemy as a symbol system for depicting the typical phases of what he's now calling magic. And war, I read you that quote from Mysterium, and we once had a bookmark lady who made us a wonderful bookmark of spirit. I think this quote is equally as important. The factors which come together in the conjunctio are conceived as opposites, either confronting one another in enmity or attracting one another in love. It's the first sentence of Mysterium conjunctionis, meaning that union isn't always preceded by love. It's also preceded by hate. And, you know, that quote by Rollo May, hate isn't the opposite of love, apathy is.
They confront each other in what?
Enmity? Enmity. In other words, hostility.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the war. And I think he's realizing that aggression, hate, negative states of mind can lead to healing just as much as positive ones. And so that's a new idea. For Freud, see, that's the death instinct. And Jung's saying, no, it's a component of union. Now just think of Japan and Germany, now our allies, once we hated each other.
Let's hope that this plays out for Islam and...
I think it will. Yeah, I think it will.
I was thinking about that, though. There's one big difference, and that is that we conquered those other countries, and we're not about to conquer Islam, and nor are they about to conquer us, at least in the foreseeable future. And I think that if there isn't, when there's a conquering, you're going to then make a kind of peace that you can't make if you're, if the enmity is constantly at one another's throat. So, you know, it's possible to see that enmity may play out in a different way than it did in the war. So, you know, I'm just saying, I don't think it's parallel.
It's a big question mark what's going to come out of it. And I think that pretty much takes us to the top of the second column on 310. Oh, one more thing I wanted to mention. How far we've come. Look, this is what we did last time, but just as a comparison, I did a little digging. Look on same page 310, the first column. I think, again, a marvelous sentence where it says brackets in two and go down one, two, three, four lines. It is unclear how great one's humility must be to take it upon oneself to live one's own life. Now, compare that. I just dug around. Some of the things he said earlier... I wanted to embrace the sun and rise with it. What a difference he's gone through. I caught the sun without realizing it and carried it in my hand. That's just sheer inflation. So that's what he's worked through in the previous pages. He's come to his humanity and humility, and now Philemon can start talking to him. I think that's the overview of where we've been the last 17 years on this material.
Gary, could you say what we did last 2 weeks ago with Issachar is the difference between being guided by the self and being possessed by the dark side of the self.
Mm-hmm. Right, definitely. Right.
But isn't that the point of going through the process, that you first of all identify with whatever, what is like the sun in his case.
Yeah.
And you identify with whatever the archetype that you're in at the moment. And then only after working through it did you get through.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things he slowly figured out. Yeah. And that would be his theory of narcissism, which, you know, is the big buzzword today. Yeah.
But that's a definite stage that you need to go through.
Definitely.
Meaning narcissism, kind of like Freud's identification of the ego with the unconscious material that has become conscious, which is what you're saying.
Yeah, they put it, and I think contemporary psychology puts it as, oh, a developmental failure, a lack of mirroring as coming out of the family constellation. I don't think Jung would necessarily disagree with that, but in a larger picture, that state of inflation can be seen as a stage in the transformation of the self. What I, you know, these people are almost impossible to work with, but if you can, in our field, what I will say to them is, look, you go around thinking you're the center of the world, you know, you're the most important person. The healthy part of that is you are addicted to importance. Nothing wrong with that. Just find a human way to live that out. Do important work. Care about important things. Sometimes that works. It generally doesn't work until the puffed up ego has collided with something. But you can see in and of itself where some people, you know, think nothing is important. A narcissist thinks they're important, which in a way is a step forward from nihilism. It's just then they can't make the transition to do important work, do important caring, give important things to the community. That's what's important, not you. It's what you leave behind. I think that's how he would understand it from the archetypal point of view. Okay, so now we're hearing dictation, and you know, I'm trying to decide the best way to do this. I don't think we need to hear everything he says for every point, but to look at what ideas of his later psychology are contained in these texts. So, no one rises above himself, second column, who has not turned his most dangerous weapon against himself. One who wants to rise above himself shall climb down and hoist himself onto himself and lug himself to the place of sacrifice. In other words, unconscious people are generally very critical of others. Take that criticism and criticize yourself. In other words, withdraw projections. So I see in that section the beginning of his understanding of what it means to withdraw projections. Now you might say, well, but plenty of people are self-critical of themselves. But you can be sure when it comes time to really examine the nonsense they're doing, they don't do it. So it's taking the critical faculty and applying it to the shadow. Then he just goes into what that would mean socially, what suffering must be brought upon humanity until a man gives up satisfying his longing, and so on. So that's four. I would see in that paragraph the beginning of his idea of projection. Your craving satisfies itself in you. Point five there on the second column.
Can I just ask a question about the way of the cross? That's what we're going over, the way.
Yes.
Now, for the Catholic, there are nine stations. How many?
14.
14? Is that still done? The way of the cross, right?
Depictions
in most Catholic churches. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think they still do
it
around Good Friday.
Right. They still have.
Yeah.
I may be wrong. Oh, okay. So Jung's number of stations are different from the church.
But does he give a number of?
Well, he's got the goes to the number seven. Yeah. Is there an eight too?
No, no,
oh, I see. I didn't think that had to do with
the station
of the cross, but it might.
Well, I mean, he says it's the way of the cross, and he lays out
mm-hmm.
the... Oh, I see the eight. Yeah, there it is. And then he lays out the...
Well, that could be, Carol. Yeah. But where's one?
I guess
the beginning is one.
The beginning, yeah. The black serpent is number one. Mm-hmm. That's different. Okay, just curious.
It never even occurred to me, but it might be. Your craving satisfies itself in you. And, you know, I'll just sum that up. How can I put it? Craving... for material goods is often a substitute for craving to fulfill yourself. Now that is so applicable today with the concept of cornucopia kids. You heard that? Well, just kids are given everything. Except the gift of being seen for who they are. The parents throw more and more and more and more at them. But they never stop to say, what do you want to be as an adult? I think I told you about the man I talked to who had this beautiful daughter who was starting IU, and I said to him, this is a social thing. What's she going to study? I don't know. Well, what are her interests? I don't know. See what I mean? So I think a lot of our greed is the emptiness that comes when we're not able to be the person we are, and out of that emptiness we accumulate more and more. And that's the same thing he's saying there in the last sentence in 6. Your greed cannot die out so long as you do not desire yourself. So this relationship between greed and selfhood.
Some wise woman gave me a little magnet that was a quote by Alice Walker that said, your task in life is to learn to want yourself.
Wow.
David. Your task in life is to learn to want yourself.
That is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Is this the bookmark lady by any chance?
Might be the bookmark lady.
She gets around.
She may have more tasks than she can handle by the time this seminar is over. Now, here, under number 7, I believe he starts hearing thoughts that will later become his theory of symbolism. The mouth utters the mouth utters the word, the sign, and the symbol. Now, I wonder if it would have been better to put the word with a capital W. The problem in German is all nouns are capitalized. So you do get into confusion sometimes. In other words, he's distinguishing between words that are thoughts and utterances from the soul which come in image form. Remember that story I told you about the pseudo and the two types of thinking? Thinking in thoughts and thinking in pictures. That now he's realizing that thinking in pictures is another way of thinking. In other words, symbolic thinking in our modern way of understanding it, Jungian psychology. And what he's simply doing is telling himself the primacy of this thought process. And those of you who are doing a Birkhuser book, you know, she'll harp on this again and again. The fact that reason, we are at a point where reason cannot solve our problems because it can only understand things within its own frame of reference. And new things have to come from symbols. I think that's pretty much that number 7. And remember, probably remember this, but the editors point out the difference between a sign and a symbol. Is that familiar to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then at the top of 311, our freedom does not lie outside us, but within us. And then that last sentence there in that paragraph, one creates inner freedom only through the symbol. And I think, well, we hear that word freedom so much today till I want to puke. And I believe the problem is that we use the word without a preposition. He's talking about freedom to. We say the word to mean freedom from. But freedom to is the ability, the freedom to commit yourself to yourself. Does he?
Freedom's just another word for
nothing. Nothing left to use.
Nothing ain't worth nothing if they ain't free. Isn't that actually Janis Joplin?
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
Our Lord, why don't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friend will have Porsches. I gotta make amends. But more on the symbol. But here is something interesting. The symbol is the word that goes out of the mouth. Now, again, I'm saying capital W, meaning the word as spirit, and spirit meaning that inner knowledge which moves us forward. Does that all sound familiar if I say it like that to everybody? But that rises out of the depths of the self. Now, am I right in thinking this is the first time we've heard that word in this book? I don't think we've heard the word self before.
Well, with the references to the Indian material, we did.
But did he use the word self?
I thought he did. Maybe I'm wrong.
Would you mind checking on that at your leisure?
Okay.
Maybe he did. But anyway, it's certainly one of the first times. And so I did a little digging. When was the first time Jung used the word self? And so this is 1914. A wonderful book, if you want to buy yourself a Christmas present, is Liliana Fry Rohn, F-R-E-Y hyphen R-O-H-N, From Freud to Jung.
Spell it again, please.
Fry, F-R-E-Y. Hyphen, wait, sorry. Yeah, Frey hyphen Rohn. Fry Rohn. And it's From Freud to Jung. Yeah, here it is. Couple of things she says. One of Jung's most important achievements was the discovery in 1928 of a center of the personality, the self. That was probably the first time he published and described it. Then she says, she quotes Jung saying, "I have called this center the self." And it's in an essay called The Relation Between the Ego and the Unconscious, which was first written in 1916, which would be 2 years after this, but was rewritten in 1928, 1935, and 1948. So I don't know whether he used the word self in the 1916 essay or not. But he did use the word coming to selfhood or self-realization in 1916 for the. And I think that would probably be the first time it was published in his works. So if you do get her book, this is on page 270, 269, 270, and 221 in her book. But I just thought it was interesting that we, if we didn't hear it before, it's now becoming a centerpiece of the discussion. And that you can't, I mean, the concept of symbol makes no sense without the self, because what the symbol does is symbolizes the self. It symbolizes what you are becoming.
So you think this is his first use in our text?
Well, I'll be curious what you find. It's the first one I remember.
Okay. What year are we in?
1914. January of 1914. All this has happened within a couple of weeks. He started like in the fall of 1913. So just imagine what that guy was going through. Jeez. The rest of that, number 8, is talking about the symbol. Just to touch on a highlight, if one accepts the symbol, it is as if a door opens leading into a new room. You can just apply everything you know about symbols, and it's what he's describing here.
I once, when I was like a late teenager, had this symbol. I was moving from, I guess, paganism or atheism, whatever I was, I don't know, into Christianity or into the church, and I had this symbol of this big door behind me, and I just kept my toe on the door, but the other door was open. Like I didn't want to try to let go.
Again, not a terribly important idea, but I find it interesting to see seeds of Jung's later work here. And so the next paragraph, to find the mandrake, one needs the black dog. Since good and bad must always be united first if the symbol is to be created. Well, he takes up that theme of the mandrake in Mysterium, Canuctionis. And Edinger has given a beautiful account of that in his Mysterium lectures on page 116 and the following. The idea is the mandrake is a little human being in root form, which is stuck in the earth. And what the root extractor, the rhizotomist, the person who extracts roots.
Rhizotomist.
Oh. That works. What the rhizotomist has to do is tie a rope to the mandrake and then tie it to a black dog and then go considerable distance from the mandrake and call the dog. The dog comes running and yanks the mandrake out of the earth, and at that point the mandrake shrieks and the rhizotomist has to cover his ears or he'll die with the horror of the shriek. And, well, Jung is, you know, giving that as an image for what it takes sometimes to bring the self at the core of a complex, namely the mandrake, into consciousness. I think some of you have heard me say, one of my first dreams in my own training was, in the dream I went into the hour, and I showed my analyst my finger, and it had a huge gash in it, and the finger had started to heal, but had healed smaller than its size, because it was contracting to fill in the space of the wound. And in the dream, she looked at it, and she says, "Oh, that won't do." She took my finger and yanked it back to their real regular size. Blood spurted everywhere. I woke up screaming, "Ah!" See, that's a mandrake moment. And what Jung makes of it is you have to have the ability to deal with strong affect when working on these complexes. And I like the way Andrew puts it. He says, that means there's no prissy fooling around. So again, not a terribly important point, but you see these images appearing here, which Jung then later expanded on in his, you know, Mysterium was 4 years later that he then went back and picked up that mandrake theme. Okay, then in the morning, what we get there is this image of the charioteer. Now, he'll work that image a couple of places. For the moment, let's say it has to do with circumambulating. You know that word? Going around something again and again. And he will soon talk, am I the charioteer, or is the charioteer in me? See, the beginning of the distinction between ego and self. That when I pay attention to the process of circumambulation, that's where the self begins to emerge. In other words, meditating on myself again and again. But he'll take that even further. But that's the first place he mentions the charioteer.
Where is that?
The second column on 311, the paragraph beginning in the morning, go down four lines.
Begins the meaning lies, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. Page 311? In the morning?
In the morning on the first column.
The first column. Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, because he returns to that idea and that.
The character is also over
yeah.
the second.
Right. Gotcha.
Right. That's where he expands on it a little bit. I think we don't have to go through all of this because he's trying to express to himself what all this stuff means. And as long as we get the basic idea, I think we're okay.
When you talk about the middle way.
Yeah, why don't you read that, Sandy?
The word is the guide, the middle way, which easily oscillates like the needle on the scales. The word is the God that rises out of the waters each morning and proclaims the guiding law to the people.
Yeah. So the middle way, again, that's, see how he's figuring out what the self is. He's just lived through that, and now he's conceptualizing it.
I guess I should have read the sentence before that. The newborn child grows quickly if I accept it, and immediately it becomes my charioteer. The word is the guide, the middle way.
Yes. But in a minute he's going to say, am I the charioteer yes. or is the charioteer in me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, it's the charioteer, isn't it? Another dimension of the charioteer comes up in the second column there. Here maybe we'll go slow for a minute. But what, you see where I am, that second paragraph, second column. But what is the resolution? Everyone see that? It is always something ancient precisely because of this something new. For when something long since passed away comes back again in a changed world, it is new. So that's the archetype. And, you know, he sees true creativity as recasting an old truth in a new form. To give birth to the ancient in a new time is creation. So, I mean, take what he did with alchemy. It's an ancient truth, 500, 600, 700 years old, but he showed its modern relevance. This is the creation of the new, and that redeems me. Salvation is the resolution of the task. The task is to give birth to the old in a new time. The soul of humanity is like the great wheel of the zodiac that rolls along the way. Let's just put a pause there. Again, just showing you how later ideas pick up some of the thoughts he's got here. I'll read you what he writes about that. The horoscope is itself a mandala, a clock, with a dark center and a leftward circumambulatio, it's Latin for circumambulation, with houses and planetary phases. A related idea of the identity of Christ with the church calendar, of which he is the fixed pole and the light. Well, I just brought that along to show you how he picked up the idea of astrological time related to the central value of Christ, which is what we're trying to bring into being in our personal lives, with an eye to what the age needs.
Where is that from?
That is from Collected Works 12, paragraph 314. And that image is Collected Works 12. What's that word? Image 100.
Paragraph 314?
Yeah.
Say again what you said about time and Christ. Just
well, this is, he's sort of extrapolating from this idea, but that there are historical periods. And our creativity is shaped by that, by the historical period we are in. Because what we need to do is address the issues of that period. But to do so, we may draw from an earlier period and recast that truth in the language or the framework that will speak to our current time. And that it's one of these ideas he's got, that time is qualitative. So you might say, you know, the issue of our time is narcissism. It's greed. It's political independence. And what we need to do is address our creativity toward those issues. And if we're living our creativity deeply, it will address those issues. It won't address the issues of the Roman era, it'll address the issues of today. A world community. So on.
Some of the issues in the Roman era are common to today.
For example, greed maybe, huh?
Greed.
Yeah.
Among other things.
But I think the idea is what would have been the solution for them won't be a solution for
us.
Yeah, right. And that's what he's trying to work with.
But that's what he's talking about. You have to go back to come forward.
Right, again. Yeah. And see, now we're on the charioteer again. Mm-hmm. So he's expanding that idea of the charioteer.
And he really points to essences. He's mentioned this before in the book, essences. Or essential aspects of the psyche that have to be carried forward. And that's why we go back, because
right.
There's like something that is a thread, or
right.
Something that builds upon itself,
right.
Even though
yeah.
It is different.
And that build upon itself is the circularity of the charity.
Mm-hmm.
Charity.
Mm-hmm. That's why we can't just cut off the past epoch. We just
right.
have to keep that thing transforming.
Right. No, yeah.
That center, is that, it looks very tranquil with mountains and maybe birds.
Yeah. Why don't you kill the light there for a second, Ian, would you mind?
Some sort of building. Is there? Okay.
Is that clear enough?
Yeah.
It looks like a village. Just a little village there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that
like
would
old
be...
old village or something.
That would be the center itself or whatever. But it's almost as if what he says earlier about, at the top of the page, the point of origin is where the mind and the will stand still. That felt very much like that place,
mm-hmm.
because everything's going out here, but in the center, it's just there. And you have to, and what he says, I love, it is a state of suspension that evokes my outrage, my defiance, and eventually my greatest fear. For I can see nothing anymore and can no longer want anything. I just, that center just really says it. Thank you for bringing it.
Yeah, and so you've got the center and then the two images of the of astrology,
mm-hmm.
And then see the clock,
mm-hmm.
11, 12, the hours of the clock. Oh, there's 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So the identity of personal time and I'm going to say cosmic time or historical time. Because each of those would define a 2,000-year period and the idea of the tonic month. So anyway, just
and then
yeah.
Your sense of your uniqueness as an individual determines by, say, for example, the zodiac.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then that meets time and space.
Absolutely. That's what he's driving at.
But with the core.
With the core. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
and
for them, this was Christ.
Right.
We would rephrase that, maybe our central value or what mm-hmm. we stand for or something like that.
Or your purpose in the world.
Your purpose in the world, yeah. Better even. Okay.
And you think our issue is narcissism, greed,
what we do? Well, yeah, just think what, certainly the complexity of living in a world community where communication is instant. Just in our last 20 years, the competition between our economic system and India and China. I think certainly a cold-heartedness and a narcissistic attitude, just me, short-term thinking. Even in my area, I remember when I was a kid, we lived in a subdivision, and our neighbors, we all had, you know, wells in the septic tanks. Our neighbor's well went dry. Well, what do you do? So the guy came to all the families around and said, would you help me bring in city water? They all pitched in. Otherwise, he'd have been ruined. You imagine anybody giving a shit today if your neighbor's well went dry? People wouldn't care. So, I mean, we see this loss of community feeling. I think that's part of it, too.
And I think now, because of technology, that community is the world, because it's so instantaneous.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the past, even at the turn of the century, we wouldn't know what was going
right.
on. And
exactly.
It would take a long time to know what was going
right.
on, say,
yep.
in the Middle East or in China.
Right.
But now it's we just know.
Easily.
And so
yeah.
sense of community is now expanded.
Yeah. And the two sides of that, that we are a world community and yet we are more alienated.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you have heard this story. I don't think I've told the group about the kids at Butler and their smartphones. Some of you heard that. I was at a party for my French teacher bought a house. This is my young friend, French teacher. She just got married and they bought a house. So they had a little party. And everyone left and a bunch of people were sitting around, including me. One of them, most of them were faculty at Butler. And the Spanish teacher said, I have seen, I've been teaching at Butler for 35 years. I have never seen this in my entire life. I, for my senior class, I have them break up into groups of two, choose a partner, and give a class presentation. So I tell them near the beginning of the semester, at break, go out in the hall, when you're out in the hall, find a partner, and come back and tell me who your partner is, and then we'll work on assigning a task. They couldn't do it. They could not talk to each other at the break. They came back to class. She said again, go back out there and talk to somebody, pick a partner, and come back, and we will take it from there. They went out. They couldn't do it. They could not talk to each other. You know, say how eras have certain personality or certain personal social issues which are typical at the time. I mean, that hasn't, I can't imagine it ever happening before. So these are the sort of issues that time brings to us, and creativity then will, if it's lived deeply, begin to address that. I think that's what he's getting at here. Okay, should we have the lights? And so summing up kind of what we've said, hopefully, is that sentence about halfway down that paragraph, but what? There is no part of the wheel that does not come around again. And a little further down, it belongs to the essence of forward movement that what was returns. And then the next paragraph, the meaning lies in the manner and direction of the recurring creation. But how do I create my charioteer, or do I want to be my own charioteer? I can guide myself only with will and intention, but will and intention are simply part of myself. Consequently, they are insufficient to express my wholeness. Intention is what I can foresee, and willing is to want a foreseen goal. But where do I find the goal? I take it from what is presently known to me. Thus, I set the present in place of the future. In this manner, though I cannot reach the future, I artificially produce a constant present. Everything that would like to break into this present strikes me as a disturbance, and I seek to drive it away so that my intention survives. Thus, I close off the progress of life. But how can I be my own charioteer without will and intention? Therefore, a wise man does not want to be a charioteer, for he knows, and I love this next part, for he knows that will and intention certainly attains goals, but disturb the becoming of the future. So he's this, again, distinguishing in another image, ego and self, that distinction. Futurity grows out of me, I do not create it, and yet I do, though not deliberately and willfully, but rather against will and intention.
So is he saying with will and intention we get off the middle way? We're not on the path of the middle way?
Yes, that...
So you change the future by not living the middle way?
Yeah, the middle way would lead to a genuine future.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, why is that important? What's the most prevalent form of psychology today? Cognitive behavioral therapy, where any thought that is disruptive to your present is redirected. And it does change behavior. But suppose there's a meaning to that error in bringing forth a new future.
And I think it's important that the middle way includes well and intention. Too much well and intention pulls you off, but some is too little.
Yeah. Well, it takes will and intention to bring it into being.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very important.
You have to have both in the right balance.
Yeah, but the question is attaining that balance.
But that's what he was all about this rationalization, this will and intention making things happen. And now he's like, reading this this part reminded me of the four quartets, you know. You have to stay in that state of suspension and hold those offices, and it's damn hard. Mm-hmm. Especially when you've been controlling your life, as he has been all this time.
It depends on the focus of your will and intention. If it is to create that future, you're kind of screwed. Mm-hmm. But if it's, to stay the course of the path, and that's where you direct mm-hmm. your energy, mm-hmm. your will and intention, mm-hmm. then I think something can be created out of there.
Mm-hmm. Don't we all, yes.
To stay the course of the path, we don't need creativity.
If my will and intention is directed towards, say, my own analysis, my own inner work, that is what he's saying will lead to the creation of the future.
Right.
Right. But that's what I was trying to say.
Well, that was the chariot. And more images that are communicating to him that psychology, which he's going to, you know, delineate in thought down the road. But what we got there is this idea of the past and the present and the future, the limits of will, and so on.
I've noticed this phenomena myself, in here someplace, I can't put my finger on. That when I'm falling asleep and I'm asking for a dream, if I'm not really upset about something or really concerned about something, then I may not even get a dream. But it's like I have to be disturbed. I don't like that.
Too bad.
There's no solace here.
Just going back a little bit, just to understand how he uses the word here.
Yeah.
And sign and symbol, you said everyone understands the difference. And I tried to read what it said in the footnote.
Oh.
I didn't do it. So,
yeah.
So what's, briefly, is sign more rational and symbol more irrational?
Well, it's somewhat semantic, but a sign would be a representative of something known or knowable or once known and forgotten. Like, you know, when Freud calls a church steeple a phallic symbol, Jung would say, no, it's a phallic sign. Or if you dream of a sausage, you know, Freud might say, well, that's a phallic symbol. You can say, no, it's a phallic sign. It's a knowable entity.
Because it's already been defined.
Yeah, it exists. But a symbol is something that has never yet existed.
Points to a mystery.
Yeah.
Good, thank you.
And so the symbolic attitude is, you know, living with questions. What will this image become at some future time? You might say, it's maybe a little simplistic, but symbols are representative of as yet evolved futures, and signs are images of things present and forgotten or past and forgotten. Once then a symbol becomes real, then it becomes a sign.
Okay. Freud's symbols quickly became signs.
Yeah. Well, Jung would say Freud couldn't grasp that the unconscious produced symbols. What he was talking about were all signs. And again, why is that such a big deal? Because that idea hadn't existed yet. And so Jung is trying to figure out what the difference is. Should we have a stretch?